week's episode of The Rebooted Show is brought to you by Beehive, the platform trusted by enterprise publishers like Newsweek and Time. Newsweek is in the midst of an exciting transformation. With AI disrupting search traffic, they're building direct relationships with their audience through newsletters. Bharat Qureshi, Newsweek's chief product officer, spoke about why they chose Beehive. And he said that Beehive's consumer-first, tech-driven DNA was exactly what they were looking for. That B2C background ended up growing their tool into being enterprise ready. Newsweek has aggressive newsletter plans designed around adding new audiences and launching new products. With more industry leaders like Newsweek migrating to Beehive and 2026 planning in full effect, now's the time to see how Beehive can take your content to the next level. If you want to see what your next stage of growth could look like, go to beehive.com/TRB. That is spelled BEEHIIV.com/TRB. And meet with Beehive's team of growth and newsletter experts today. Thank you so much to Beehive for their support. Welcome to The Rebooted Show. I am Brian Morrissey. Very excited to... I'm going to butcher your name, Max. Max Chien?
Thanks, Chien. Yeah, Chien.
Chien. It's Chien. It's very
T
difficult.
Is silent.
Well, the E is the tricky part, because Chien or Chien. I actually went to YouTube to... There's conflicting SEO on this, so maybe it's something that you could... Because
yeah,
I mispronounce every
That's
single name.
My friends called me in
college. I am excited anytime anyone in media is launching a new media company. Max and his partners have done just that with Caper, which is all about the power around food. We're going to get into the thesis of it. Max is a veteran of The Athletic and Puck, and I see footprints of both in this model, but maybe I'm wrong. Max, just start off by, what is your theory of the case, like, in media? Because you're launching a new company, and a lot of people, you could have gone into commercial real estate.
Well, I think I feel really lucky that I get to keep building in media. I find it really fun, really interesting, very fast paced. I think maybe my risk profile lends to it. And I just love telling stories. So I think first and foremost, I just feel like quite lucky I get to do this over and over again and in different ways. You know, I mean, there is so much DNA from The Athletic and from Puck that's coming into this. I mean, at The Athletic, you know, it was category specific. And I think that was sort of something that I thought was, you know, obviously worked really well and wanted to kind of go back into. You know, I think Puck obviously covers lots of different areas. That's sort of its moat as well, its ability to sort of play in between lots of different worlds. But I think there's a real strength too to kind of coming back to this common denominator of food, restaurants, hospitality, and how sort of, you know, these different category lenses now focus in that space. Yeah. And when I was thinking about what to build next, you know, I built this with Dan Sinas, who I worked with at Puck, and we both had a shared interest in this space and in food and restaurants and actually really what happens beyond the food and beyond the plate. I think that was what was most interesting to us. And so we began researching the landscape. And in a lot of ways, food media had, to me, looked actually a lot like sports media did in 2016, 2017, when The Athletic was getting going. And by that, I mean that it sort of felt like it had devolved into kind of this world of lists and rankings on the consumer side. And, you know, these sites that are really focused on chasing search traffic, right? And not necessarily telling great stories. And so that was one really interesting piece of pattern recognition that hit me.
Okay, so that was like the equivalent of the scores, right? Like, I mean, like in that, like, I think The Athletic, at the launch, at least, The Athletic was like, we're not going to cover, like, what happened in the game is not, you know, what
yeah,
we're
no
about.
Recaps. I mean, The Athletic was about smarter sports coverage for the smarter fan. And again, it didn't feel like in a world that has got so many great stories and characters, it didn't feel like there was a singular brand that was consistently doing that. And you'd read a great New York Times story and New Yorker sort of Grub Street story, but there wasn't, I think, the consistent dedication to, hey, let's cover the industry and let's do it in a really smart way to tell these stories and really cover the business of this world.
Okay. But let's just return to the theory of the case though, right? Like, so at The Athletic, subscriptions and Puck, right? Subscriptions plus ads. I mean, the ads came subsequently to The Athletic, always part of Puck. And I think being like narrow and focusing on an affluent audience, I feel like is that, and then the prosumer part of it.
Well, so yeah.
With Puck, that I don't know, like I'm trying to unpack the elements that went into what makes up Caper.
Totally. And so let me start on that last point. So first we kind of examined the consumer side of food media and kind of felt like we saw this consistency where, again, it was list rankings, service journalism, reviews, criticism, recipes, and not really any really consistently great storytelling. Then we started thinking about, what we did at Puck in the worlds of Hollywood, fashion, you know, business, politics, and how we approached the professional class there in a way that was very, very different than the way the trades had previously, where it was, you know, and so when we, I think it was voicier, it was certainly personality driven, a lot more opinion, a lot more analysis. Obviously, Bellamy's done, you know, an incredible job, you know, at leading that there at Puck. And in food, the B2B landscape was incredibly utility driven more than anything. So for, and almost focused on proprietors and how they can improve their businesses, but not necessarily tell their stories, right? And so we look at the, and we, so then we sort of saw that and we were like, okay, well, there's lots of interesting stories here again that are strategic business stories about how to succeed in this world, right? And then there's also incredible characters that are behind all of these things. So let's create that universe and let's bring that to light and let's cover it more in depthly. And we started to really circle these hospitality groups, which I think are incredible businesses with incredible leadership, but you really only, at least I only really knew about the person at the very top. You know who Danny Myers is, right? You don't know any, like really that many, anyone else. And so I was like, well, let's start to look at this layer of this executive layer that's below that, but is got their finger on the pulse of the business, making huge decisions, leading things, going on and starting new things. And so I was like, oh, maybe that is the wedge in and beginning to cover that more in depthly. And in some ways they're like the producers, you know, in Hollywood and covering that class more in depthly. We do think a lot about, you know, producers as sort of these hospitality groups and agents, you know, with, you know, maybe with the comms groups in this world and then the chefs as the actors, right? And the stars. And I think that analogy is really interesting for us in terms of how we're going to cover this. So we kind of then identified that space and so I'm going back to then the consumer side, and that then began to circle this prosumer world where, again, we felt it was lagging in both departments. And that's very, reminiscent of Puck and kind of how that coverage area came about.
Okay, so it's like, I think that the Hollywood comparison is an apt one, is an interesting one. But, restaurants are everywhere. So I assume, like, it's only been, a week or so. Like, so a lot of it is very New York-centric.
We're launching the site today, actually. There's a lot going on.
Okay, well, I've been getting the emails, but...
We've been publishing newsletter only, but now the site will be live. And yes, to your point, like we are very New York centric, you know, Emma, Annie, Chris, you know, the whole team is all here, Dana, but we think that we have contributors in different parts of the country, in different parts of the world.
So you're going to cover other restaurant food scenes? Would you say it's food scenes or?
So the way that we want to travel, so to speak, is to always anchor in the category that then will turn its lens towards restaurants and hospitality. And by that, I mean, like it's a real estate story, right? Or it's a business story, or it's a media story, right? And that's the actual anchor of
everything
the coverage.
In New York is a real estate story.
In a lot of ways, restaurants are a real estate business. Like that is a very, very, fair point. But I think that's how we want to be anchoring our coverage. And then you can spoke out to lots of different parts of the world, right? Just based on that. And that is a lot of our audience strategy. I mean, certainly, you know, Chris, Annie give us great connectivity in the space. They both come from, Chris Crowley was at Grub Street for 10 plus years. Emma Orlo was at Eater and has lots of other bylines, but has been in food media. And they give us great connectivity in this space. But then we think about, Annie Armstrong, who came from ArtNet, right? And we're saying to Annie, hey, let's have you focus on what's going on the walls in these places, right? And, the decisions about the design, about what's on the walls, and about where it comes from, who it's from. And we think that's an interesting angle to now take your category expertise and your network, really, and turn it towards food, restaurants, and hospitality. And I think there's an opportunity to do something similar, in real estate, in business, in media. I mean, I think media on food media is a really, really interesting category.
Oh my God.
I think that's more interesting than media on media, in
hey,
some ways.
Watch
and bigger
it.
And bigger than right. It's like, but it's, it's like the creator
point
economy,
taken.
The cookbook economy, right? Like all the stuff that's getting created for film and television, right? That again, this common denominator that we can all relate to, and is such a lived experience of food and these places that we go. So that's a bit about the audience that we think. And at the end of the day, like we're going to serve the professional class.
Yes, that's what the point is. Who are you going to be essential to? Because I feel like these days when you launch, you have to be essential to a group of people. I don't care if it's 30 or 300 or 3,000 or 30,000. It's not going to be like 30 million anymore. Who is it going to be essential to? Because my concern with any sort of prosumer model is that it gets caught in between. It's neither B2B nor B2C. It's something in the mushy middle. It's not, it doesn't have the it doesn't have a wide enough aperture to capture the sort of consumer dollars, but then it's not like narrow and deep enough to get the sort of corporate expense account money either.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll see our tiers, and we do have a professional tier that's going to be, higher priced. But I'd say that our core audience is these hospitality groups and people working in and navigating a career in the food, restaurant, hospitality industry. And again, I think that we can tell their stories, give them space to tell their stories in new ways, cover them, in interesting ways, and also provide professional products for that class. So at the end of the day, that is the core. And our belief is that if we're serving the pros in this industry well, there is a consumer class that will actually find that incredibly interesting and want that same level of access and knowledge base that they can use in their own lives to leverage, right? And I think about the professional class, like yourself, right? Who dines for sport, right? And wants greater level of intimacy with these places they go. And reading Caper should help you become a better patron because of the knowledge you'll gain about these places you're going, right? So knowing the maitre d's name, like for instance, I think that's like a really, really interesting, component of all this. It's going to help you show up at these places, have better manners, know who's doing the work behind the scenes, and actually experience these places much more intimately than you would have otherwise.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, if you can still like grease the maitre d' with 20.
Bring a six 20? Pack.
I don't know, get a table. I don't deal with Resi or any of that. Like New York restaurants have become almost unusable.
It's crazy.
As web pages because of this idiotic restaurant reservation system. But we can talk about that later. You're charging $100 a year for I guess basically on the consumer side, and then $300 a year, $299 for the professional, and the professional comes with, it says professional products to navigate the hospitality industry. You get in-person event invitations and additional dispatches focused on profiles and business reporting. So it's to be essential to the people within the industry that do this for a living, right? Mm. And then the outer rung is people who are just into the culture of like restaurants. I mean, to me, it's like, if you think about like the business of sports has become, is it ha- has prosumer heat. Like, you know, Politico made politics, you know, have that. I mean, at the time, now it's like accepted, but it was, politics was not like a consumer category like it is now. Is that like sort of fair?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there is a class, a professional class that is, you know, that is out, that it does not work in the space, but they are out in these restaurants, and this is where deals are getting done.
Yeah.
And so they're incredibly enthusiastic about the space. They might even be, you know, supporting them in investment rounds, right? Writing a check to someone to support, you know, the restaurant for that purpose. And I think that's the enthusiast that actually is pretty prevalent in some of these, you know, in New York and Los Angeles, Miami, all these food capitals. And so, yeah, that's definitely who we're after. And I think if we cover the world for professionals, that class of people will be served as well.
Yeah. And there's certain industries that lend itself to this. And I think food could be one. I hadn't like thought about it as one, but even like real estate, like Real Deal in some ways, like they're a little bit more hardcore B2B, but a lot of their stuff flexes into, because everyone's interested in real estate, at least in New York or Miami, like everyone's interested in real estate. And there's amazing stories within, you know, the real estate world. There's a lot of like crazy characters. I mean, I don't know if anyone's seen The Cabinet.
It's a great comp, and I've been trading notes with Amir on this stuff. He's been awesome. It's absolutely a good comp. I mean, those are shared lived experiences that many people can relate to, just like going out to eat. And, you know, the accessibility is something not to be lost as well. Like, you know, it's a lot more prohibitive to go and pay a ton of money to put art on the wall, right? Like that's versus, you know, going out to eat, that's a lot more accessible, you know, in a way to express taste and have status and be sort of in culture.
Yeah, and food has risen up the sort of cultural hierarchy, I feel like, in the last like 10 plus years. I have no evidence for that, but that's my vibe check.
The evidence is the, you know, art imitating life or life imitating art. Like, look at all the production that comes that's focused on food. It's sports and food, right? It's like, look at all the production that happens around these shows. And I think that's a little bit of that evidence. Yeah.
So let's talk about the business model. It's going to be subs and ads, yeah?
Subs and ads, yeah. Diversified revenue mix from the start and an events program from day one. We'll do our first next month. And then over time, we really want to develop our IP muscle. We think we're, you know, going to be telling, you know, really great stories, and how can we create that muscle that is developing them on a consistent basis and into different formats.
Right. So, I mean, like, look, it just happened, but like, I could imagine, you know, the sort of rise and fall of like Noma being like an IP project that had Caper been around through the whole drama. Mm-hmm. People don't know, there's this drama that's been swirling around Noma, which is like a famous restaurant it's in Copenhagen, right? I've never been. Mm-hmm. And that can lend it, because again, these are like outsized characters. I mean, we're used to the sort of outsized characters of chefs, thanks to a lot of documentaries and TV shows.
Chris Crowley kind of got a local take on that. I mean, we certainly, you know, New York Times had that, you know, blockbuster for sure. But then Chris kind of went a little bit sort of beyond the story and got the local flavor of how the local newspapers were covering it, which I thought that was an interesting approach.
Yeah. So tell me what you've learned then with The Athletic and then Puck with subs as like a base for the business. Because you're launching with, so I mean, again, I got a few of the newsletters, but now I got to pay, right?
Right.
But you're launching with subs. Yeah. And talk to me about how you, like, what are the sort of lessons you've learned from your previous experiences that you're applying to this model?
Yeah, well, it is porting audience with the right talent. I think that's really important. And that was certainly the name of the game at The Athletic. You know, I think the local sports writer had incredible loyalty. I think that's something that maybe, I don't know if it exists in a profile of writer in any other class. And I think the reason for that was that the local sports writer many cases got their dream job at a very early age and stayed. You know, they became the local sports writer at the Chicago Tribune or whatever local newspaper, and then were there for the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. And literally developed legacy readership. You know, dad, the son read it, you know, the son, like, and so when we began at The Athletic, you know, taking those journalists out of newspapers and putting them behind the Athletic paywall, their audience did transfer very, very well, you know, and so that's where subscriptions came from. And then you saw the scale of The Athletic and, you know, how we expanded, and we basically went city to city and had this go-to-market strategy that worked incredibly well. You know, Puck in some cases similar, but not the same scale, right? It was a little bit more about, you know, finding the top journalist in all these different fields and really, again, certainly leveraging their distribution and speaking to their audience, trying to bring them over. But in many cases, that those journalists just were a different, you know, they represented a different profile because they moved around to lots of different publications over the course of their career. So they probably, you know, shed some audience along the way, or, you know, they were able to develop their own personal brand along the way and then keep more and more audience with them. So I think, you know, again, and that's probably, that is in a lot of ways why at The Athletic, we were able to be subscription only, right? And then at Puck, we were diversified revenue from day one. Now The Athletic under the New York Times also has an advertising layer, but up until acquisition, it was a pure subscription play. At Puck, it was, you know, advertising plus subscription. And that was necessary in order to support that team and that talent. And I think right now at this scale, you know, with Caper, it's similar. It's you know, small team. We think top voices in a couple of different areas covering the space and making sure that we're really diversified, you know, both with advertising and subscription. I think the events component is going to be really important here. Obviously, this category lends incredibly well to it, and so we want to lean into that.
So let me ask you this: does it lend into this? Because here's my like sort of counterpoint to it.
Yeah,
Rafat Ali had told this to me one time because he had a food publication for a little bit, and he's like, the problem with it is in B2B, you're going to do events and everything, but they're always in the kitchen. They can't take like a night off. They can't take a day off. Like they're constantly in the kitchen. Huh. So like we couldn't get, so he was like, the problem is the hours. Yeah. Cause if you work, if you're in the business, you're tied up too much. That was his.
Yeah. I don't know if we've found that yet. I mean, you know, our events program, one of them is going to be this really unique event that showcases top chefs from around the city, basically in a cooking competition style, in different rooms around the city. And these might be fairly unexpected rooms where you wouldn't expect to get an amazing meal cooked for you. And, you know, we're fortunate to have a great partner there. And the connectivity so far makes us believe differently that they are accessible. They're highly competitive. You know, they like want to be in these rooms. They want to test out new things. They want to just straight up win.
This is a type of event that you're going to be doing. This like chefs are competing. Is this a consumer event, or is this for people who are like in?
Well,
in
it's just the style of the event. The attendees could be directly out of our membership, or it could be a more curated hospitality leadership dinner, for instance. But we think the spectacle of it is what's really interesting, unique. Doesn't feel like you're at a you know kind of business kind of networking dinner. It's actually quite a spectacle. And it did, you know, we went to a few over the summer. It's got this sort of underground rap battle meets Top Chef vibe where you're showing up in a place, you know, that you again wouldn't expect to get this amazing meal. And you're quite literally in the kitchen with these top CDCs and they're preparing a meal. It's coursed out. There's voting, there's a winner. And, you know, you learn who they are over the course of the evening. And just seeing, I think what stuck with me was just how competitive they are and just seeing how competitive these top chefs are.
Yeah, I couldn't do this with programmatic advertising, that's for sure. It'd be difficult to pull off. Yes. One of the things that you are bringing over is, you know, I think a flavor of this talent, basically, strategy, right? Like, and tell me, is it exact to how, you know, you talked about the difference between athletic and puck, but this seems like this is an integral part of the strategy. How is it different than say how, like, you know, you guys were approaching it at puck, for example?
The deal structure is similar. You know, there's base, there's a bonus off direct subscription driven. For Caper, we're adding, you know, a company, you know, bonus based off company goals as well that our team will participate in. There's equity in the business. We think that's incredibly important for the team, especially them, you know, everyone taking a risk at the same stage as us. And then we also are including IP participation and making that sort of a day one component of everyone's deal, so that, you know, regardless of what they're writing and how it goes on and gets developed, their level of participation, they'll have some level of participation no matter what. And that could, you know, increase based on their involvement in it going forward. So yeah, all of these, you know, we want as much of this participation as possible. It's really an important component here. And that model started at the Athletic, you know, and then we ported it over to Puck, and now I think taking it one step further with Caper.
And how about what's the advertiser base? Like, do you expect this to be like endemics, or is it going to be a broader category?
Yeah, I mean, so certainly some endemics. The point of sale, you know, platforms, Square, Toast, all those for restaurants, I think are a really interesting category for us. It's credit cards, you know, and speaking to their loyalty programs. It's endemic on the hospitality and travel space. I think that lends well. Maybe there's sort of some of the DMO market world that makes sense here
What's DMO?
That's the destination marketing organizations. Okay. Like, you know, Visit San Diego, stuff like that. Spirits, certainly, you know, is another area that we want to really, really hone in on. So yeah, some endemics, but then I think it broadens out. You know, our first partner is Loewe. We think there's a luxury skew here as well, and in terms of the class that we're speaking to and the audience that we're speaking to. So we think there's a lane there as well.
That's interesting. The first partner is Loewe. How's that? Like, explain the tie there, because I would have expected like a Resi or someone.
Resi, I mean, well, yeah, that's one that we certainly want to unlock.
Yeah, no, I know.
Well, Loewe, we had some relationships and got to know them, and they just, you know, I think they appreciated the vision and, you know, understand the class that we're speaking to. And I think they wanted to ultimately be first up for this as well. And we were able to create an attractive package that put them on it.
Yeah. So how do you grow in 2026? I mean, do you expect starting now to be the playbook is very different than what you ran at like the Athletic and at Puck?
I don't think it's going to be, you know, the dial up your Meta ads and search ads as much. I think it's going to be a lot more partnership oriented, event oriented. I mean, we think that there are different, this world is it's connected in so many interesting ways. And it's such a relationships business that I think it's really navigating that correctly with partnerships, and maybe that's through events, or maybe that's in some other ways. But I think that will be a big part of it. You know, our contributor base, I think, will extend in some interesting ways to help with distribution. Certainly, like, we're bringing in voices, you know, from all over the place. I actually think that's how we can, again, differentiate. I think that's how we can have an audience strategy, by, you know, being a bit unexpected with some of the bylines that you'll see. And those will be people that are flanking Annie and Emma and Chris. So yeah, I think it is a little bit different. The creator side of this and creator partnerships will factor in somehow. I think we've got a great partner, investor partner in Wheelhouse. And I think they're helping us think about some of that stuff, for instance. And then understanding how to really work well with these hospitality groups too. Mm-hmm.
And also you raised money. I think you raised about $2.5 million. Talk to me about that decision. It's almost like the reverse now, where it's like, you know, it's cooler to bootstrap. You know, it's not like the big rounds of the past, right? I mean, it's $2.5 million. That goes pretty quickly, particularly if you're based in New York City. It's like, well, it's like a one bedroom.
We it gives us pretty good runway. We're pretty lean and mean. Yeah, it was, I mean, the fundraise itself was pretty efficient. I think this concept in this category really, really resonated with an investor class. I mean, and I think there was, you know, definitely interest in the space from Human Ventures and Joe and Heather over there who led it, and then some of our other investors. So I think that just resonated quite well. And then I sort of have been fortunate to work with a lot of investors in media over the years. So, you know, called up a lot of people that I've had overlap with at The Athletic and some other places. And so that is really how it came together. The decision was...
But it's not like you're getting on the VC train, like that this leads to the A, to the B, to the C, like, you know, like that.
Yeah, no, I think we, you know, this can get to profitability like quite quickly. And Okay. Again, just stay in discipline, but it's not, and it doesn't require the same level of capital, particularly on the product and engineering side of things, you know, that it once had. We partnered with Beehive to do this, you know the team over there well, and they've been incredibly supportive in terms of building this and lending resources and sort of supporting how we do it. And it's a fraction of, you know, what it would have cost to build, you know, five, 6 years ago. So I think that's a huge difference.
Well, I mean, Puck,
well,
you guys like started your own, I mean, you built more, it seems like, just like looking at the, like you built more custom stuff like with Puck. I mean, I know The Athletic did. Right.
It was. Yes. And I mean, they were both, you know, WordPress sites in the end, but with a lot of custom, you know, on top of that. So again, there weren't the same out of the box tools that exist now. And again, it's just not as capital intensive as it once did. And, you know, will we, yeah, you know, hard to say if we, you know, if we'll need to raise more or not, but I know that we've got what we need to give us a real shot here and to make sure we hone in on the audience and develop stories we want to tell.
Mm-hmm. And I assume like this should attract like an affluent audience. Cause I mean, look, in media, like you pretty much, to have a shot these days, you really should be going after like an affluent audience, either a business audience or just rich people. Like, is that fair?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, people that are going out to eat and have that disposable income, I think is certainly an attractive category for us. We, you know, this executive class in hospitality, certainly. And I think people that want to, you know, support this space or just enthusiastic about this space, you know, represent that wealth class.
Okay, cool. Well, Max, I am looking forward to charting its evolution. And as I said, like, I'm excited that, like, you know, people are still starting media companies. That's good.
Thanks,
good.
Brian. Yeah,
it's a positive.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is a fun place to be. We're lucky we get to do it.
And, yeah, all the tourists are gone now. It's only the hardcore media people left. So it's great.
It's true. Is that it? Yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Thank you, Max.
All right, man. Thanks.